I'm DeMelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. I've known Joe Kai since he moved to Portland in 2016. He is a violinist looper who is a classically trained musician. Joe Kai creates layers of melodies with his violin with timed digital repetitions that fill the room with rich sounds. And he also sings beautifully. We're listening to one of my favorite songs composed and performed by Joe Kai. It's called Stick On Me. Yeah. Let's give a listen.
So I have been with you, but I know not where we go. No, I am no longer scared, but I find that I'm reaching for the glue. So stick on me and lick your wounds and we'll grow together.
Kai has performed internationally and has recorded several albums, and he's someone who connects to not only the artistic community, but to AAPI communities as well. His recent collaboration is called Tiger Tiger. It's a Portland-based event created to promote AAPI joy and nurture healing by bringing together AAPI musicians, creatives, and organizations. It's my pleasure to welcome Joe Kai to stage and studio on Arts Watch. Well, it's so good to have you on. You know, I've had you on stage and studio in the past, but this is now stage and studio on Arts Watch. And so it's just a pleasure to see you again. It's been, what, a couple of years since we talked, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I followed you during the pandemic, though. I mean, you were still producing music. And also, I have to note some kid-friendly videos, too.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for having me, D-May. And yeah, it's been a while, I think. Because of the pandemic, and then a year before the pandemic, I had twins. I had kids of my own, which I think has inspired a lot of the creativity that creative journeys that I'm following these days.
How old are they now?
They just turned 3.
Wow. Yeah. It's crazy. You can really follow the pandemic through your children too, because I mean, you had to be especially careful. I mean, with newborns, and I mean, that must have been such a challenging time for both you and your wife.
Yeah, I think we're lucky that they had each other as far as socialization is concerned. Yeah, I mean, especially at the beginning where we just didn't know anything about COVID. So having these tiny little babies that you're tasked with protecting and nurturing, it was very frightening.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine, you know, they're so vulnerable, especially during that time before the vaccinations. I was wondering, you know, since everybody's been hopefully vaxxed, you know, have they had more chance to be socialized? Because that's really important for kids from a young age to have that social interaction.
Yeah. Well, for starters, they just got their first vaccines yesterday because, you know, that age group was just approved. A couple of years in, maybe about a year and a half in, we realized how important that socialization was. And so they get to play outside with other kids from the neighborhood, you know, and I think depending on how COVID is looking at any given time, they're usually masked and the kids don't care. I think the grownups whine a little bit more about having to wear masks than they do because they're extremely adaptable.
So that's the thing too. You were kind of a stay-at-home dad, you know, whether it was intentional or not, you were. And you were still creating music, but you also, I think, did you find that your focus tended towards creating music or projects that you could do with the kids, your twins, and also things that they would appreciate listening to?
Since having kids, I think a couple of new opportunities, at least one of them has been around creating music for the kids and for myself. You know, when they were babies, I would hold them and make up little ditties and lullabies for them. And I realized, why don't I take these little snippets and flesh them out into full songs? So there's been a children's music project called Hi Joe Kai. And that's been, it's been really wonderful to try and create the type of music that I wish that I had as a kid, not only in terms of what it sounds like and the types of instrumentation that it's using, and the genre as well, but also the type of subject matter. Songs about dumplings, songs about your grandma who lives across the sea in Korea. Yeah. And then I also started working on a Korean language show that is produced here in America. It's called The Woori Show, W-O-O-R-I. And it's such a fun kind of Korean-American specific show that I think is the audience is for everyone, anyone who is interested in Korean culture and Korean language, and really fun to create songs that normalize the language that I feared speaking in public as a child.
Well, you are an immigrant, right? And your parents are Yep. immigrants as well. And I remember, I'm wondering how much of your culture, it sounds like you're starting to impart as much of your culture as possible, or Korean American culture for your young ones. What's their names? Like, I keep saying young ones and twins, but what's their name?
Yeah. Junie and Theo. Junie and Theo.
Oh, so boy and girl?
Yep.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're imparting quite a bit of Korean American culture to them already.
Certain aspects of it. I think linguistically, it's difficult because, you know, I think anyone has childhood traumas and things that they're trying to understand about themselves, and you know, just because of the language that was spoken at home, a lot of the things that I'm still trying to recover from, a lot of those things happened in Korean. So it's been an interesting struggle. I want them to have access to their heritage and access to the language that I grew up with. At the same time, I also want to protect them from some of the less savory social conservatisms that I think were all around us, and also embedded in the language as well. So it's been an interesting journey, but as a Korean American now, and as an Asian American, it's been fun to be able to choose the aspects of my life that are authentic to me and to share them. So not all my songs obviously are about dumplings or Korean grandmas. They're about, you know, banana peanut butter, which happens to be one of their favorite snacks. It's really been about fashioning for them a more accurate and fun picture of what their life is now as Korean Americans.
Well, I remember you talking in our prior conversations, but also you did a TED Talk too about being a translator for your parents when you were growing up, and the kind of impact that had on you dealing with adult topics, right? Which so many of us did with parents who aren't, you know, first language speakers. So I'm just wondering, you know, how much of that do you recall, you know, of that that experience?
Much of it, which I think is the problem. I mean, I think that's something that I've been thinking about too. You know, my mom has been able to visit multiple times during the pandemic. And because I played that translator role for my kids to have, I am at the point where I realize that for my kids to have a deep relationship with my parents, I have to play that role again. And it's not something, it's a role that I have a complicated relationship with. And so, you know, when my mom is visiting, there are times when I petulantly think to, but yeah, it's complicated.
Well, yeah, sometimes you just don't have the energy, especially if you're raising kids too at the same time, you know, to be the interpreter all the time. I was wondering, how much of your musical abilities are you passing on to your kids? It sounds like a lot. Have they started gearing towards singing or anything, you know, musical?
Yeah, I'm certainly not of the, you must start them with violin at age 3 mentality. Right, exactly. But, you know, we'll come down to the basement and where my studio is, and the whole family will sit around the piano and sing songs that we enjoy singing together. So yeah, they've been having fun and showing some interest in different instruments, but mostly just banging things and making sound. And sometimes I'll turn my loop pedal on and we'll just kind of sit there and I'll pass the mic around and they can record their own voices into the loop machine, which I think is fascinating for them to be able to hear themselves played back.
Oh, and they understand that's themselves?
Yeah, they just kind of giggle, which is honestly the best reaction to music that one could have.
It really has opened up a whole new audience, you know, this family-oriented music you seem to be additionally moving towards. besides your main career. But I'm wondering mm-hmm. if it has you thinking about sort of the, is there any kind of niche for Asian American family music? There's, yeah. you know, you hear about like Baby Shark, right? And how phenomenal mm-hmm. that was. And I can't stand listening to that song. but you know what I mean? That there is probably a need for it as well.
For sure. And I think, well, the children's music industry is overwhelmingly white. And I think there's a real thirst for underrepresented voices in that scene. How the industry then goes about looking for those voices, that can be fraught and a little dubious in the sense that, oh, you're an Asian children's musician. Can all your songs be about what it's like to eat dumplings and sing about phoenixes and dragons and have a gong in it?
Oh, well, not a gong, please.
There's just an expectation. I know. There's just an expectation to perform one's identity in a way that is palatable and understandable by a white American audience that wants to associate you with an exotic other.
In other words, stereotypically.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think it's been a struggle, but you've seen that in Sesame Street. There's a Korean American puppet that was just introduced, Chiyoung, and the Linda Lindas. And I think there's a kind of a renaissance of Asian American creativity, specifically Asian American. And what I mean by that is not just performing heritage-based art forms, which are seeped in the past, but really, I think, unique representations of what it means to be Asian American in America today.
Right. The whole spectrum, right? It's not just about foods.
Right. There's one of the songs that I wrote is called Scaredy Cat. And I was able to throw some things in. You know, it's kind of a list of different things that my kids are afraid of. And I think by singing about them, you know, they become a little less frightening. But I was able to throw a couple of things in there for myself as well. You know, a giant pickup truck with a flag. Like that to me, you know, despite, believe me, Dime, I have friends who have pickup trucks. But there's something about that symbol that is frightening to me.
Yes.
And so being able to, I think, access my own childhood and to, like I said, provide and create music that I think would have given me a bit of solace as a child. That's been the liberating part of creating music for children.
It's not like it was an ideal time for anyone, but given that you were a young father and then shutdowns happened, you had no choice but to really stay at home because you couldn't tour anywhere. In some ways, that connected you, like mandatory connection with your kids, which is awesome, right? And I know that you had a really huge creative outlet still. You've got your own studio, so it's not like anything really stopped for you except perhaps performing in person.
Yeah. I do think like everyone during the pandemic, even creatively, it was really a struggle. I think the kids' music was a saving grace in the sense that I could be silly and create songs without worrying about its merit. I mean, the pandemic, though, has been a struggle, definitely creatively. And a part of that, I think, is because I'm in this period of great personal change. Being a father means not only, you know, making their snacks, and being primary caretaker doesn't mean, you know, feeding them and making sure things are clean, but it's also the deep personal work of observing my childhood, the parenting I received, and looking at how I can change some of those narratives, muffle some of the echoes of generational trauma when it comes to how I approach and interact and communicate with my children. It's been difficult. And really, it's only been the last 6 months where I feel like I have finally been able to create music for my main project and the music that I want to hear now as an adult.
For listeners who aren't familiar with the technique of looping, is it very difficult right now just to like show one sample of how you would do that?
No, not at all. Okay, I'll just turn this on and
describe the instrument that you're holding, because it's not a usual violin that you have. Have you had instruments made for you?
This is not a custom one. It's actually a pretty easily found and purchased Yamaha electric violin. I can't say I'm very kind to the things that I own, the things that I own. And especially when I was traveling, it was light, it was, you know, easy to replace, and it just made sense. And for people who are just listening, it has the shape of a violin and the strings of a violin, but the body is basically just a straight line with kind of an homage to the curves of the violin with a little wooden frame that is completely see-through.
It is. It's almost like you just have the fret, you know, and mm-hmm. and the strings, and there you go. It's so lightweight looking.
Skeletal. It's the skeletons,
yes.
Of a yeah. So that's pretty loud. Try to get it similar to, there we go. Okay, similar to where my voice is. So basically, looping allows me to chord multiple things and have them play back. So if I have a little bass line, so I just recorded that into the looping pedal, and that will just play
back. Now we're hearing it.
Back.
Yeah. And
yeah,
you're not
exactly.
Playing
and it'll
it.
Continue
it's
to play
it's
back.
Playing by itself.
Exactly. And that allows me to then record different things on top. Like, and then I can continue to do things over the top ad nauseum. And it'll just continue to
play. I just love this, Joe. I've seen you do this multiple times, and I'm always amazed that you can become your own orchestra.
Yeah.
In a matter of, that was just a minute.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's been wonderful to work with the theater diaspora and, you know, for theater and kind of create these sonic.
Oh, well, I was just astounded. You know, the first time I actually met you, I was doing a project for Meteorites, my organization, with Southeast Asian youth telling stories, refugee stories of their mm-hmm. elders. And
At IRCO,
the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization. And you said, oh, I could come. And I said, oh, that'd be great. Come and see their readings. And, well, I could also like bring my equipment if you want. Like you totally volunteered. And so you did. And you gave this phenomenal pre-show concert that I was just blown away by. And everybody was blown away by, like, who is that? Who is this Joe Kai? So, yeah, I really appreciate that. But if anybody wants to just Google your TED Talk, too, you did that in your TED Talk. And you just said, oh, I, you know, it kind of deconstructed what you're doing and then played for them. And it's just so phenomenal to see you do that in action. Because it's all real in life. And, you know, you may or may not record that song.
Right.
It's how you perform. It's total. I don't know. Is that improv, do you think? You just did an improv.
Yeah. That will never happen again.
Wow. And that to me it's almost like conceptual music art, you know, conceptual art through music. I feel like that is something that is very unique to you. When did you start doing that?
I think I became disenchanted with the kind of the path to becoming a classical musician and becoming a player in an orchestra. And so in college, I started doing a lot of improvisation and going to blues jams, and I wanted to get better at improvisation. So I bought the looping machine initially as an easy way for me to practice improvisation. So, you know, I could set a chord structure with the guitar and then record over it, or not even record, but just play over it using the violin. It's become a songwriting tool. It's become a performance tool, and something that is really, it's very integral to the type of music that I create.
When you start writing a song, do you write the music first and then think of what the words are? Or do you sometimes have like a poem in mind and then you start singing it? What's your process?
Yeah, it just depends. Oftentimes it really depends. There are some songs where I feel like there's a certain phrase, either melodically or lyrically, that I can't get out of my head. And from there, kind of the different facets and things kind of lock into place from there. You know, one thing I do love about the looping pedal is that it allows me to do that with limited resources. So I don't have to book a studio and go through that whole process, but I have this, you know, little loop pedal, and I can try and explore and experiment with all the different sounds, melodies, harmonies, and words as well. And for someone who, as an Asian American, I think there's a lot of internal identities. Having a looping pedal is, to me, is also just a symbol of that experience and being able to explore in one track, you know, in one track, the different parts of me that exist in a given recording.
What's that you're playing? What you just played? What you just created?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's still in there?
With a little... It's still in there, and I can pull it up whenever you need me to, D-Mate. Just give me the cue.
Yeah, send it to me. That's beautiful. I think it's beautiful just listening to what you just did. But that, you know, it's you make it seem so easy, but you are a skilled, trained musician. And so when you create a melody, that's a melody, you know, and then you think of a counter melody. So you're really doing the math in your head, too, as you're creating it.
I think it's honestly, I would say it's more linguistic. And at this point, it's natural. When I am trying to stretch beyond my comfort zone as far as harmonies or different kind of lines on the violin that I'm trying to create, then yes, I'm thinking and challenging myself. But definitely as far as looping and kind of what I created, it's more being able to listen to what I did, what I said, and then kind of responding naturally to that which was said. So it's almost like a kind of a natural free-flowing conversation with myself.
Well, as far as natural free-flowing conversations, one of the things I've really respected about you, Joe, is that you always want to connect with the AAPI community, and you want to collaborate a lot. And your recent collaboration is with Tiger, and Name for the Year of the Tiger. And it's an event at Fern Hill Park on July 17th with live music, community organizations, and food. How did you get involved with that? Tell us more about it.
So I'm actually just straight, I'm organizing it. So let me go back to last year. This was right after the Atlanta spa shootings, and then, you know, AAPI Heritage Month. And this was, I had a very visceral response to it and put out a series of jingles about microaggressions, about life as an Asian American. And these things went viral on TikTok and Instagram. And it was interesting and fun at the moment, but then it became very exhausting and very performative. I found myself living in a mental space in which I was constantly looking to mine my own trauma for the purpose of these humorous 7-second jingles. It was powerful, I think, for the AAPI community and people who experienced that, because they felt seen and they felt heard. And I think it was also an educational experience for non-Asian Americans to get a glimpse into some of what it means to be Asian American. And at the same time, I was still performing my identity. And it became very exhausting to the point that over the summer of last year, I basically just stopped. I stopped performing. I stopped doing things on social media. And I was really just exhausted and needed time away. And so fast forward, I think, you know, some 8-9 months later, during which period, honestly, I was really struggling mentally and thinking about myself as a creative and artist. And, you know, what does it mean to be creative? And why do I create? And it was in that space, I'd say right around, you know, spring of this year, that I began to write new material, which was really written for me, not for anyone else. Speaking truth to some of the things that I was working on with my relationship with my parents, what it means to be a father, and some of the struggles that I've had from that. And so then it was in that space where, okay, I'm writing all this new material. I'm saying no to basically any and all performance opportunities for COVID, but then also because I want to give myself this free and liminal space to explore. That Soraya, which is the project of Jane Louie, who is an LA-based Taiwanese-American artist, she just lent her musical talents to Everything Everywhere All at Once, the movie with Michelle Yeoh. And she reached out and said, hey, I'm touring with my new album. Do you want to organize something? And I thought, okay, this could be cool. This could be a cool connection. And so I said, yes. And I was reaching out to clubs when I realized this could be so much more than that. And, you know, we had two AAPI artists looking to create a bill, a band bill together. Then I reached out to June Magnolia, which is Julia McGarity's project. Julia is mixed race, half Korean American, half Irish American, and has an amazing music project here in Portland. And so then we had this three AAPI.
You didn't say anything about this. I mean, you've got these top-notch musicians who are coming to Portland, essentially, right?
Yeah. So Jane, yeah, Soraya is from LA, and then June Magnolia is based in Portland.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so I just thought it was a really unique band, modern band bill that we'd created. And then I basically just began dreaming and planning, and Tiger has been the fruit of that. It's basically a one-day festival with all AAPI-led performers, including the three bands I mentioned, and Ami Patel, who's a South Asian American poet, Kevin Ipopo, who is a Samoan poet and community organizer. And then on the food side, we have Grind With Triz, which is a Hawaiian cart. We have Mata PDX, which is a Vietnamese-American food vendor. Baon Kainan, which is a Filipino-American food vendor. I think to me, it was a way, as the organizer, it was fun to reach out to creatives that I think are on the forefront of what it means to be Asian American. So, I wouldn't say any, you know, all the bands are electronic pop and jazz and rock influenced, and the food vendors are not serving quote unquote authentic food, and aka antiquated, but they're really speaking truth to their experience. Richard Lay of Mata PDX is creating, he's a American born Vietnamese person and who grew up in San Jose. So his cuisine is this interesting cross section of San Jose, Northern California, plus Vietnamese cuisine that, you know, perfectly encapsulates kind of what his life, what has been authentic to his life as a Vietnamese American. So yeah. And then, you know, community organizers are coming in to have kind of these interactive tables and performances, and it's going to be an amazing party.
There was also a song that you sent me, Ice Cream Truck, I believe. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's one of your, that's one of the new songs. Is it a collaboration with one of the artists that will be there?
Yes, that'll be with Joshua Rohanic, who goes by Cloud Castle. And it's one of the children's songs that we worked on together.
I was going to say, it felt like a real departure listening to it. I'm going to play a little bit right now.
Hey, go ahead, take a seat. Beats on repeat, got me feeling too sweet.
Woo. This one's just for fun, just for fun. Jump into the sun, to the sun.
And that seems like a little bit of a departure from the Joe Kai songs that I've heard before.
For sure, for sure. It's upbeat and kind of fun. Still has a little bit of nostalgia, which I think is on brand for me.
Yeah, I don't know if you've rapped before, too.
For sure. Well, yeah, I think on that track, the rapping is Josh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no rapping from me on that track.
Well, I also like the mission of the Tiger event. It's to nurture healing, especially amid the rise of anti-Asian violence and hate. And I've asked other APIs about this too, but since we've been talking about your parents, I'm wondering, have you been concerned, worried about your folks? Mm. Have you known people who have personally witnessed or experienced, you know, any of this violence that has been on the rise exponentially the last year and a half?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I have friends who live in New York who, you know, were followed. And even when you see and witness through social media these types of acts of violence and you hear about shootings, it's hard not to feel that when you're walking down the street with or without actual intention. And, you know, for me too, I mean, after those shootings, it's hard to walk around Portland, Oregon and not feel in danger. And so when my parents were here, you know, they're older Asian, you know, my mom is maybe 5 feet and, you know, just this tiny Asian woman. And I've seen many videos of people that look just like her getting attacked. So yeah. you know, I think just in this conversation and, you know, what you were just saying, I am drawing a parallel to some of those jingles that I created last year, which I think existed in the internet world. But with Tiger Tiger, this is a chance for me to take that same mission of healing and being seen and being heard, but bringing it to the local level outdoors, where we can look into each other's eyes face to face and give some of that love and healing to each other. Yeah, on the local level.
And also something you can bring your families to.
Yeah. My kids have never seen me perform before because of the pandemic. And, you know, that was another driving factor for approaching Portland Parks and Rec about making it part of their Summer Free for All concert series.
Oh, that's so excellent. Yeah, you know, we all love free, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
And outdoors. And, you know, there's just, yeah, it sounds like it will be a really fun event, but also meaningful.
Yeah, well, and as a kid who grew up with educational privilege but not money, I wanted to make sure that this was an accessible event. So there are no tickets. And then we're inviting under-resourced AAPI families and people to come, because we'll have food vouchers for you.
Oh, that's excellent. So they can experience it without having to pay if they can't afford it. I think that's such a brilliant idea. That is so brilliant. Good for you. And you produced all of this. You produced it.
I am producing it. Yeah. And I've been really overwhelmed, honestly, with the amount of, with the amount of love that I've gotten from the Portland AAPI community, you know, Korean American Coalition, APANO, Utopia PDX, JACL, the Chinese American Citizens Alliance, Portland Chinatown Museum. There are so many people so many organizations who have stepped up to become community partners. And it's really fun. I mean, it's been cool to see the hunger for us to build a powerful coalition, as well as just a fun, joyful experience in the larger AAPI community in Portland.
Well, I love how you've mixed mission with music and community. So kudos to you for this. I'm wondering, what is ahead for you? How do you see your future now that I imagine you're starting to book things, I'm not sure what, as a musician, composer, what's ahead for you?
I think, I definitely wish to continue writing music for children's educational programs. I've been able to talk with Sesame Street, and I'm continuing to work on the Udi Show, and it's been really fun to pursue that.
You're writing for Sesame Street?
No. But my name is in the ring for potential future projects.
Excellent. I love hearing that. That's great.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, I think because I have that outlet, I've been creating really fun music with a band. So I'm still using my looping pedal, but, you know, at Tiger Tiger, I'll be introducing my band and debuting many new songs, which I think kind of embark in a new direction that to me is really exciting. And I think more indicative of the influences and experiences that meant a lot to me.
I just think that you're, you know, a dear person, a wonderful, gifted musician, and I'm just so glad to know you. Thank you, Jokai. I'm so glad
glad to know you, D-May.
We got a chance to, you know, catch up a little. You know, I've been following you, and, you know, he's doing okay. So kudos to you for the event, too. Well, no, I check up on you, you know, just make sure
for
things are all right. Tiger Tiger is July 17th at Fernhill Park in Portland. Is there any other shout out that you want to do that you didn't get to do?
Shout out to my family, Junie, Theo, and Natasha, for being wonderfully supportive of my career during this process, for challenging me every day, and then also rewarding me with a lot of inspiration.
I bet you're a good dad. So it's so good to see that too. I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, D-May.
And that's it for Stage and Studio this week. For more info about Tiger Tiger or to hear anything else or to see photos, go to stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Till the next conversation, I'm D-May Lo Roberts.
You're my number one. Good vibes coming from within. One for everyone.